go ahead and call the Senate Finance Committee to order. The time is 4 minutes after 9 a.m. Monday, March 24th, 2011. With me today is Co-Chair Senator Hoffman, Senator Ellis, and Senator Thomas, and myself, Stedman. And we have Senator Olson charging in the door. We're going to have four bills up today, and if we don't finish this morning, we're going to pick up at 1 o'clock, but we should make it this morning. We also have been joined by Senator Egan. So first up is going to be Senate Bill 18, duration of the regular legislative session. Second bill up, Senate Bill 97, community revenue sharing and education funding, followed by Senate Bill 102, Alaska Affordable Heating Payment Program. And then we're going to finish up the day on Senate Bill 23, film production tax credits. So today we're going to start the process with Senate Bill 18 by Senator Stevens regarding the duration of the legislative session. This is the second hearing on the bill. We heard it for the first time on March 8th. The intent today is to entertain amendments and move the bill from committee if members don't have any other concerns. And here to present the bill is staff from Senator Stevens' office. You can come forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Tim Lampkin, staff to Senator Stevens. Senator Stevens sends his regards. He was unable to attend this morning, but I'm here to answer any questions or help support the dialogue.
Senator Hoffman?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I do have an amendment, but I think the date, the technical amendment, I think it should be on line 3, 2014, which would be the second session of the regular session. So with that technical amendment, I would move amendment number 1, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, and I'll object for explanation and just Senator Hoffman, you want to just touch it again, please?
My explanation is that, you know, if we do this next year, I think that would be a little bit too early, and I would suggest that we do it 2 years from next year so that people can digest the concept, and I think it would better fit in 2014 after reapportionment, so that there's additional time for the legislature and for the general public to understand what we're doing.
Okay. And I'll remove my objection to the amendment. Any further objection to the amendment? Seeing none, Amendment 1 is adopted. Do we have any other amendments? Seeing none, do we have, let me just go over the fiscal notes again for the public. In the committee, there are two fiscal notes from the legislature in your packet. One note for $450,000 to cover additional session expenses. One note for $413,000 to cover the cost of additional per diem. The cost associated with both of these fiscal notes is reflected in the information column because the Legislative Affairs Agency has sufficient carryover funds to cover additional costs without the need for an appropriation at this time. I thought it was better to have the numbers out in front of us regardless of the ability to carry it in our current budget. Have any other comments, concerns? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As we look at this bill, is there, this bill only deals with the length of the duration as opposed to when the session starts. Is that correct, sir?
It says when it starts.
Respond to that question, please.
Through the Chair, Senator Olson, if you'll note on page one, excuse me, on page 2, lines, there is an accommodation that in the beginning, the first session, we'd start on the third Tuesday, and the second session, when we have 120 days, we'd start on the second Tuesday in January. So it does impact when we start, depending on which the length of the session.
Mr. Chairman, I bring that up in regards to the fact that as you look at the legislators that have school children that are here, that means you're bringing students down to switch schools mid right after the session starts, and then going back to their respective districts, you've got to go back to the school, so it's quite a change for those legislators that are dealing with students that are still going to either grade school or high school. One of the thoughts is there a consideration by the bill sponsor to go ahead and have it so that the 90-day session starts later in the year, so that people would be here to the end of the school year?
Through Chair Senator Olson, Senator Stevens is agreeable with those types of changes. He just got this bill in the hopper, so that kind of dialogue would take place. It might be worth noting that in the prior committee, there was the option or the idea presented that perhaps each session would start at the same time. It would begin on, for example, the third Tuesday in January, and then it's only the ending date that would fluctuate. This whole point came up because of the logistics of Juneau's economy, particularly regarding tourism. The later in May that we allow ourselves to go, it gets problematic for people's lives.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The bill sponsor is not opposed to some amendments that might be out there in the future.
Through the chair, sir. No, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Any other comments, concerns on the bill? Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move the Senate Finance Committee pass out CS for Senate Bill 18, State Affairs as amended by the Senate Finance Committee, with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
We have a motion to move the bill from committee as amended with individual comments and attached fiscal note. Do we have objection? Seeing none, we'll go ahead and move the bill from committee to the next committee referral. Next up, Senate Bill 97 by the Senate Finance Committee regarding community revenue sharing and education funding. This is the first hearing on this bill. The intent today is to introduce the bill, take public testimony, and set the bill aside for further review. With us today to present the bill is Senator Hoffman. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There was some discussion regarding the high cost of operating local governments and schools when the price of oil is high, that adds an additional operating burden to the school districts and local governments. And with that, the concept of as price of the Alaska North Slope crude started to rise, we have triggers in place that would give would assist not only school districts but local governments in their additional costs, because as price of oil increases, their operating costs increase. And with that, I would ask that my staff, Mr. Grusendorf, come forward before the committee to give further detailed explanation for the committee.
Mr. Grusendorf, if you could walk the committee through this proposed legislation, please.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Tim Grusendorf, staff to the Senate Finance Committee. In your packet, you have the bill, and you also have a spreadsheet that was run by a Legislative Finance Division. First, I'll just go through the sections of the bill. The first section is the formula and the money that will be appropriated to the Department of Education, and I'll go through the formula when we get to the spreadsheet. So basically, the first section one is how the money, or who the money goes to, and that would be the Department of Education. The second section is a technical change. There was an error in the original revenue sharing calculation, and what this technical change does is basically assures that when the fund fills up, the revenue sharing fund fills all the way back up to $180 million. At full funding, and this number two on line four, the two-thirds of the fund balance, that is just to make sure that it always reaches $180 million, and it affects it more when we have a year when oil isn't at $60 a barrel and the fund doesn't get replenished after, and there's a $60 million deduction or draw out of the account. This just assures that the fund gets back to the originally intended $180 million. Section 3 just adds on line 10 the new Section D, which is Section 4 of this bill. And that's just another calculation they'll add this formula to the revenue sharing. So now we'll move to the spreadsheet. There's a couple things that I want the committee to know. We used $89 a barrel as the trigger point in this exercise. We are still working at trying to find the best way or the best level to have the trigger. I think we chose 89 because it is above the amount that's needed right now to balance the state's budget. So it didn't make sense for us to put a trigger in that was below the level that we estimated to balance the state's budget. So we chose 89 as the barrel amount, and so it'll actually kick in at $90 a barrel. If you look at your spreadsheet, line A that's going across the page, the top column, that depicts the amount of per barrel. Line C is the progressive tax rate that we collect under AS 435501 G1. And then the percentage of the tax rate is in line E. So as we go across to line G, you'll see that's what we're appropriating for revenue sharing right now. So I'm just going to use the $100 a barrel as our point for today. You'll see that under line G, revenue sharing will kick out the $60 million that is formulated to do. The additional revenue money to revenue sharing under this proposal would be what line H does, or column H, and that would be an additional $22 million at $100 a barrel. And so the full revenue sharing for that year would be $82 million, which is in column J, you'll see it's 3.2% of the revenue due to the progressive taxation of oil. So what the idea is the extra money doesn't actually go into the formula itself. It is actually going to be calculated out to go out as the same proportion as the first $60 million, but it is outside the formula. So the formula will always, as long as oil is above $60, the formula should always kick out $60 million. This is in addition to that money. And it will go out, like I say, we're planning having go out the same proportion as the first $60 million. And the last thing that we're still working on is the date that the price per barrel is calculated. We're still working on the best time frame to calculate that, because we don't want to predict it on, as it is in the bill now, it's just one day, and whatever the price of oil is that day, that's the day we're calculating it on. That's probably not going to be what happens at the end of the day. We are looking at a better way to find out what the average price per barrel is for that fiscal year. And with that, Mr. Chairman, that is the presentation for SB 97.
Mr. Krishner, I think there's a payout date. You want to comment on that?
The payout date is actually something else we're working on. The revenue sharing will go out, as always, right on the beginning of the fiscal year. I think we're looking at having a payout date sometime after the fiscal year, maybe in August. As a separate check that will go out to communities and to the Department of Education. And that's just so we can get a better fix on what the price per barrel is going to be.
If we could, let me make a couple of comments before we get rolling. You know, as we roll this concept out, a couple of things, as Mr. Krusendorf said, we need to work on. One of them is the price trigger. And do we want to do a average over 3 or 4 months or some other mechanism so we get away from this point in time that, you know, we could get our erratic pricing under that scenario, and then give some consideration to a payment beyond the date of the original revenue sharing. The concern is a couple concerns. I think for some communities it'll lead to a little better cash management. Some of the smaller ones that are less sophisticated, and then for all the communities, it's going to help alleviate some of the costs that they're going to be faced with, was we have high oil prices and are trying to heat their municipal buildings, run their fleet of snow plows and trucks and so on and so forth. We have insulated the state in many ways through fuel triggers, but we don't have that ability with the municipalities. So we're trying to reach out and try to help the municipalities deal with some of the similar issues that we deal with here at the table in our own departments. And we have questions from the committee members. Senator Thomas, initial questions from the committee members.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So when you say you're looking at the data, you're looking at a concept of like an average of the 90 days leading up to June 30, which would be July 1, would be the date that you actually accumulated that information and determined what the average was over that 90-day period, those 3 months or something on that line. Just asking you if that's a consideration of what you've been thinking.
Chair, Senator Thomas, yeah, that is one option we have. You know, we could wait and get the whole yearly average. There's a couple different ideas that we've been floating around, trying to come up with what's the best, that are the most reasonable.
And then as you looked at the effect on or the percentage of what the progressivity is at the different dollar values, did you take into consideration the amount of money that the tax credits soak up returned based on the progressivity? I realize these are pretty small percentages. You're going from just under 5% to only 2.6%. But I was just curious if there was a comparison done. Not that necessarily the progressivity and the tax credits have to be tied together, but people do look at that as a distinct relationship between those two entities.
Mr. Bruner, can you mention that the rough concept of what amount of the progressivity generated would go to this program?
What amount? So, I guess. I guess that's all in line J. And to answer through the chair, to answer your question, Senator Thomas, no, we did not take the tax credits as consideration in coming up with this proposal.
Hold it a second. I think because I heard the word credits
or
progressivity. I think if you look at, you know, on $100 a barrel, approximate revenue due to progressivity tax is $2,500,000,000. Is that correct?
Correct.
And then if we did this program, how much of that 2.5 would we be looking at spending?
3.2 billion? 3.2%.
Right.
Or $22 million.
Right.
Yep.
Exactly. So we're looking at collecting $2.5 billion, or $2,543,000,000, and we're looking at appropriating out just $22 million of this. So it's a very small fraction of the progressivity amount that would come in. So all of these terms, as we work through this, we're open for discussion to see what the comfort level of the committee members are as we, you know, work through this process. But it's a fairly small percent, roughly 3.2%, and that varies, and it could even go down at $135 a barrel to about 2.6% of what we've collected.
Decreasing now, yeah. Thank you.
Any other questions? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Gruenzendorf, as we look at some of the issues, you brought up the idea of it being possibly retroactively mandated to go ahead and pay the tax, as was happened before. Is that the case here?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, I'm not understanding.
A number of years ago, we put together the Senate Finance Committee in both bodies, went ahead and looked at a tax for the oil companies, and it was retroactive to the January 1st, as I remember. And I don't remember specifically what it was, but in this particular case, as we look at some of the high prices that are coming on now, is there the thought that instead of averaging over time into the future that we actually have a retroactive date that we're thinking about implementing this tax?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, at this point, I have, you know, we haven't discussed that yet as when this bill will take effect.
Mr. Chairman, additional, as you look at the, we've looked at the revenue sharing with, for these communities on this particular sheet that you've handed out, what are the thoughts on how to go ahead and have it distributed for the Department of Education for the high fuel rates? Obviously, the fuel rates that are going to increase in Anchorage as well as the increasing out in the bush. So what's the, do you have a distribution skeleton that you think of putting together?
Well, through the chair, Senator Olson, the schedule would be, you know, if this for education would also be a separate check after the original through the foundation formula, but this money will be spread out through the foundation formula, just like the same way that the formula puts the money out there. Does that answer your question?
To a certain degree, but I could go on one more question, Mr.
Sure.
Column D, where you're talking about the progressive tax, and at $123 a barrel, we notice that column D kicks into effect. What effect is that going to have on the collections for revenues for the state after, if it goes to, say, to $130 a barrel, where we're up to 0.8%?
Through the chair, I am not sure. I guess I'm not understanding your question.
As you look at the price of oil and you've compared it to $100 a barrel, we're going to get $60 million for that at 3.2%.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you've already gone through that calculation already. As we go to $130 a barrel for round figures, we're not only getting the 3.2%, we're also getting a column D, we're getting a 0.8%. How much is that going to increase our revenues?
This spreadsheet does not have that amount on here.
Okay. That's what my question was, because I couldn't find it. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
I think that just for those watching at home, the progressivity tax is put in there to ensure that the state share of profit oil under high oil prices, the percentage doesn't decline, that our share increases, and as time has gone on, it has been changed, and it increases fairly rapidly. But the normal progressivity without that one adjustment to it would be capped at 25%. With that little tweak, basically kicks in at $92 a barrel. It continues then to allow the progressivity percentage to advance a little bit, and under Senator Olson's question, at $130 a barrel, it would have been 0.8%. So the progressivity, instead of being 25%, would be 25.8, which would give the state approximately $5,676,000,000 in revenue, and then $60 million would go out in the regular revenue sharing contribution. But at that price, this bill would trigger another $82 million. So that's kind of the mechanisms of how it works. Just trying to close the gaps as we talk about this, you know. So
column, Mr. Chairman, column F is the column I should be looking at for
total.
The answer to my question.
Yes.
Thank you.
And again, we're getting this concept on the table for discussion, and the committee will and staff will work on this with public input and refine this as we move forward. But seeing no other initial questions, we've got one note from these are on the fiscal notes. One note from the Department of Education and Early Development showing an increase of $22 million in K-12 funding, assuming an oil price of $100 a barrel. One note from the Department of Commerce and Economic Development showing an additional increase of $22 million in community revenue sharing, assuming $100 a barrel oil. So we're going to go ahead and open up the public testimony portion. I've got a couple people signed up in-house here to testify, but first we're going to go to the off-net, and I'm going to just run down the list here. What I'd like everybody to do is start by introducing themselves for the record, who you are and who you represent, And then speak to the bill, please, and try to hold your comments to a couple of minutes. We're going to start with Mr. Luke Hopkins, please. Luke Hopkins.
Thank you very much, co-chairs and members of Senate Finance. Mayor Luke Hopkins, Fairbanks, North Scarborough, and with me is the presiding officer of our assembly, Mr. Joe Blanchard. I did want to comment on the importance of this bill and what it would do for our community. We have, of course, a backlog of school maintenance at the average amount, about $7 million a year, that we don't address all the time because we can't address fully. Taxpayers take on that burden, and in the past we have used revenue sharing to offset the increase to taxpayers. We put that amount of revenue sharing that we have received in past years right into the general fund to reduce taxpayer contributions, as other communities do. So it an increase, of course, is important to be able to address the backlog in both school maintenance and also the cost of operating are both the borough buildings, the public buildings, and school facilities. We have, last time when oil shot way up, we had to make a special appropriation just for the public buildings, non-school buildings, of a $1 million added appropriation to cover the increase in fuel costs. So this bill would certainly help our community, our local government, address those aspects of the increased costs that we're seeing once again. So I thank you very much, and of course I support this this bill, and I appreciate it being introduced and considered for municipalities around the state. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for your testimony. We'll now go to John Bowlings, City of Craig.
Mr. Chairman, good morning. My name is John Bowling. I work for the City of Craig. I'm speaking on behalf of the city today, as well as on behalf of the Prince of Wales Community Advisory Council. I'm calling in to support, Mr. Chairman, Senate Bill 97. We as municipalities certainly appreciate the legislature's appropriation of funding every year under the existing program in AS 296850. And also support, of course, SB 97 that would allow municipalities to share an increased revenue at the same time the state is enjoying increased revenue due to high oil prices. Appreciate your consideration, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony. Ryan Zach, please. Brian Zach.
Hello, Chair. This is Brian Zach from Homer, just a local citizen in Homer. And I'm speaking in favor of Senate Bill 97. And I, when I think about the trigger point, at which should trigger the support, I would also recommend that instead of the current $89, which would trigger it at $90, I think we might want to look at an even lower trigger point, say of $84, which would trigger it at $85, because currently what we're finding at the borough level and the city level, you know, the cost of oil that we're hit with, like was previously mentioned, we're not, we don't have the ability to you know, maintain and sustain our current infrastructure. And so that additional, you know, looking down at $84, changing it to $84 and making it kick in at $85 would actually provide some even greater to make up for what we've been not able to get in the past. Take some of that pressure off of the local boroughs, which is what, it's incredible. I don't know, I'm sure you all know, and you know, how difficult it is right now and how many ways the boroughs and local communities are having to cut their budgets just to maintain the status quo without even, you know, the ability to maintain the infrastructures and put anything into reserves for the future. We're all dipping into our reserves. And so, you know, there is a due, like the idea of maybe tying it to a annual average rate also rather than a monthly rate, that would reduce the cost of administrating this bill. And then also when you look at the, there's a ratio, I'm sure, of what, you know. I'm not sure that, you know, when you go from $90 a barrel up to $120 a barrel with only a 4% difference between, or a 0.4% difference, if that's actually enough, if we can really get the numbers dialed in and really look at, okay, what does an increase in $30 per barrel of oil cost the local communities in that, you know, and specifically how to maintain those government buildings. I think this would be, I think this is really common sense, and it's a really wonderful way to, you know, really help the local communities where I'm seeing that there's a lot of pressure right now because of the high costs. And then that may also help with the ability in the future to actually then let the local boroughs and communities spend more on creating infrastructure. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you for your testimony today. Elaine Price, please. Elaine Price.
Hello, my name is Elaine Price. I'm representing the city of Kaufman Cove and the Southeast Island School District, and I appreciate the opportunity to testify today. I wanted to endorse what John Bowling said. He's speaking for the island as a whole, and we really appreciate the fact that you're looking out for local interests. As you can imagine, in these small communities with limited income, this will be a godsend. Thank you very much for the chance to testify.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony today. Last one on my list is Bear Ketzler.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much for this opportunity to testify. My name is Bear Ketzler. I'm with the city of Tananaw, a rural community. And first, I want to start off by thanking the Senate Finance Committee, you know, for this opportunity to support SB 97. The revenue sharing for communities that are under 1,000 people, this is the backbone, the finances of the backbone of our communities, and it covers, you know, fuel, oil, electricity, and insurance, and things like this. And I just want the Senate to know that, you know, rural communities are doing the best we can to cut our operating costs. We're, you know, converting as many buildings we can to over to biomass. We're converting our street lights to LEDs and our public buildings to LED lighting. And with our high cost of energy in rural Alaska, the couple years ago we suspended our sales tax on home heating fuel to help out the homeowners. And that, you know, the revenue sharing is just very, very important to rural Alaska. So I thank you for the opportunity to support this bill.
Thank you for your testimony today. That concludes our off-net. I have nobody from the LIOs. Bruce Johnson.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Bruce Johnson, the Executive Director for the Alaska Council of School Administrators. We recognize that this bill is still being refined. We appreciate the concept behind it. Clearly, our school officials across the state would welcome an opportunity like this. It would ease the financial burden during times of high oil prices. And, of course, you all know the extraordinary cost in many of our school districts across the state related to utilities, with fuel being one of the big pieces there. So we encourage you to move forward in any way that our membership can assist. The business officials are under our umbrella. We'd be happy to lend some assistance if so desired. Thank you.
I think maybe, you know, you guys could give some consideration to the amount that is in the proposal for both the revenue sharing and then the schools.
Thank you. We'll do
there's
that.
There's a trigger and a dollar amount that's open for the whole thing's open for discussion, but clearly those are some big points. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Cantra, Alcantara. We've seen your mug before several times here.
It's a rare opportunity to testify here, sir. For the record, my name is John Alcantara. I serve as Government Relations Director for National Education Association of Alaska, representing about 13,000 public school employees and retirees from Ketchikan to Barrow and all points in between. First off, I'd like to thank the committee for sponsoring Senate Bill 97. I believe, as anybody who drives our roads, heats house, or heats a building knows, prices are going up very, very quickly. First off, I agree with the gentleman from Homer that 89 seemed a little bit high of a trigger, but I realize this bill has a lot of work to go through and find out what's the exact spot. Anybody in this committee knows oil prices have gone up about $25 a barrel in the last month. I think right around 115 today from about 90 just a month ago. This past Saturday, I commuted from Palmer to Seward for a day, and gas prices in Palmer were $3.93 a gallon, and Seward were $4.19 a gallon. As a daily commuter from Palmer to Anchorage, the sticker shock is sort of a daily thing. It trickles in 3, 4, 5 cents a day and can sometimes go up 25, 30 cents in a week. But the sticker shock in western Alaska can be, or in rural Alaska, can be a lot more severe. As you remember, in Galena, when it went up several dollars a gallon at one time, and the city had to step in and fly fuel to Galena to try to meet a little bit more reasonable price, it went up close to $9 a gallon, and the city brought it in at a little under $7. I'm sure there are senators in this finance committee, Mr. Chairman, that can attest to the prices in individual communities in western Alaska, and how that change can be literally dollars a gallon as the changes happen annually or semi-annually when a barge comes in. So NEA Alaska membership supports Senate Bill 97. Appreciate your work on this. It's a very intriguing and interesting concept, and I'm glad this committee is taking the bull by the horns and helping out school districts and local municipalities, and I thank you for your time.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. That almost concluded our sign-up sheet, but Kathy Wasserman, I was going to call her up anyway, but they just handed me a sheet with her name on it. She wasn't going to get out of here without putting her 2 cents in.
No, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Kathy Wasserman, the Executive Director of the Alaska Municipal League. To say the least, we're very Twitter-pated with this bill. We think it really would help municipalities with climbing oil prices. I think the most important thing that I want to speak to for municipalities as a whole, many of you Senate Finance members were key and instrumental in first crafting revenue sharing, and we, the municipalities, made a commitment to House, to Senate Finance, that when oil prices went up, we wanted to share in the extra funds that came into the state. But when oil prices went down, we were willing to also go down, and we will stick to that commitment because we believe you certainly have attempted to stick to that commitment all through, and we do appreciate that. Many of the communities are facing high oil prices and that make it difficult for them to provide basic services as the oil prices go up. Municipalities would perhaps get more money from revenue sharing if this were to go through, but they will also suffer the higher prices that make providing those basic services more difficult. So again, I'll just keep it very simple and say we're certainly in favor of this bill. We'll do whatever we can to help you. We're happy with the trigger where it is, but we're certainly willing to talk about all of that. We think that perhaps having one day to base the oil prices on might be problematic, maybe even more for the state than for the municipalities, because if we did it during the summertime, probably oil prices would be higher. And a suggestion I heard in the back room was perhaps we do it on holidays only and get the average, but that's probably it. But we're willing to work with you and do whatever you think is best. So thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony. That concludes the public testimony sign-up sheets I have today. If we could have the bill sponsor maybe speak to the Senator Hoffman. Any comments?
Just that I think with the municipalities and school districts that are struggling out there during the last few months, they've come forward to to every member of the Finance Committee asking for assistance. And I've spoken with them. The concern that I initially had was that they might get reliant upon the funds, but I was assured by, in talking with several of them, that they understand that the funds would be there only during times of high prices and would adjust accordingly and not be dependent upon the one-time payment. So I think that this legislation is going to go a long way to at least trying to address the high cost of operating local governments and school districts in the future. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Okay.
With that, we're going to go ahead and set this bill aside for further review and ask the committee members to give it some consideration and work with the chairman's office on potential modifications or questions. We're now going to pick up Senate Bill 102 by the Senate Finance Committee regarding the Alaska Affordable Heating Program. This is the first hearing on this bill. The intent today is to introduce the bill, take public testimony, and set the bill aside for further review. Senator Hoffman.
Well, we do have the bill before us, and I do have a staff individual here to go over the legislation. Again, the high cost of heating has been a problem in many different areas of the state, from southeast to western Alaska to northern areas of the state, when they're dependent upon diesel fuel for heating their homes. And I would point out that many individuals in southeast still heat their homes with diesel. And outside of the rail belt, that is the primary source of heating individuals' homes. With that, I would ask that my staff, Jay Livey, give a presentation on the details of the legislation.
Mr. Livey, if you can introduce yourself for the record, who you represent, and walk us through this bill and why it's here today in front of us.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Jay Livey, staff to Senator Hoffman. Mr. Chairman, SB 102 proposes changes to the Alaska Affordable Heating Program to clarify that the Department of Health and Social Services may prorate benefits should insufficient funds be available. Last year, Mr. Chairman, in SB 220, the Low-Income Heating Assistance Program and the Alaska Heating Assistance Program were combined into one program, the Alaska Affordable Heating Program. We made this change, Mr. Chairman, as a way to more closely align the price of oil with the amount of benefit that an individual home received from our heating assistance programs. In creating this program, the bill intended to allow that the Department of Health and Social Services could prorate benefits should insufficient funds be available. However, the department, when the attorneys looked at the bill, they had several questions about whether or not the exact wording of the bill allowed them to prorate. And so this bill has technical changes that would provide different wording to clarify that the department can prorate benefits should insufficient funds be available. Specifically, Mr. Chairman, we've made two changes through SB 102. The first one occurs on line 11, where we have added and C on that line, and all that does is to include the guidelines by which the benefits are calculated are also included in the areas to be prorated. The department lawyers felt that was necessary. And also, Mr. Chairman, on line 12, we've simply added the words on a pro rata basis to clear up any ambiguity that benefits can be allowed. So, Mr. Chairman, based on the bill last year, we have not proposed any policy changes. This language is primarily technical changes to allow the department to less ambiguity and allow them to prorate.
Okay. We have any initial questions from committee members? Okay. Seeing none, we've got 1-0 fiscal note from the Department of Health and Social Services. We've got nobody signed up in the off-net or in the LIOs for the public testimony, and we've got nobody signed up in the room.
Mr. Chairman, I think, Mr. Chairman, there are some representatives from Health and Social Services here.
Right, I have that list here. Do we have any other comments? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's my understanding, Mr. Leiby, that the Obama administration has recently proposed a 50% cut in the low-income, essentially the LIHEAP program. Are those numbers that have been proposed by the Obama administration taken into consideration as you look at the distribution of the program that's going to be overseen by the Health and Social Services?
Through the Chair, Senator Olson. Yes, that is in this whole heating assistance area, that is a huge question. The department can clarify the numbers exactly, but I think this year the state received something like $18 million in federal funds. The proposed cuts to the LIHEAP program through the federal budget are about 50%. So theoretically, the state would have approximately $9 or $10 million less to spend next year than this year. The way the bill is currently proposed, the way SB 220 currently handled this, was that the department was required to ask for enough money to fill up the benefit need, whether that money was coming from the general fund or from the federal funds. So the Department of Health and Social Services may come in and ask for additional general fund to fill up the loss of federal funds. And one of the issues with that, of course, is the timing of it and when that money can be requested, when it can be granted, and what kind of benefits are provided up until the time, should the legislature provide additional general funds, that money is provided.
Last question, Mr. Chairman. Mm-hmm. So if I'm hearing it correctly, even if this bill does go through, it does not make up for the federal funds that are going to be lost if the Obama administration doesn't come through with the $18 million.
Through the Chair, Senator Olson, that is correct. All this bill does, it allows the department to prorate benefits should not enough money become available. It does not do anything as far as the Health and Social Services requesting additional funds.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions for the bill sponsor? Seeing none, we're going to go ahead then and set this bill aside for further review. Next up, Senate Bill 23, Senator Ellis, regarding the film production tax credit. We've got quite a file here in front of us. This is the first hearing on this bill. The intent today is to introduce the bill, take some public testimony, and with that, Senator Ellis.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Senator Johnny Ellis, and I represent Senate District L. I appreciate the opportunity to present this exciting piece of legislation to you. My staffer, Matt Moser, has joined me here at the table to assist me with any technical details that come up regarding the bill.
Could you just hold a second? Senator, we're going to have a brief at ease.
Okay.
Please continue, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We're presenting the original version of the bill today.
Version M.
Correct. Mr. Chairman, welcoming the multi-billion dollar film and television production industry to Alaska is a rare opportunity to grow and develop a new industry in our state, create jobs for Alaskans, and most importantly, for me, to diversify our economy. How many times have you heard elected officials say we really need to diversify our economy just away from hydrocarbon resources in our state? Many of us may have done that. I know I certainly have over the years. And this is an opportunity to do so. I've introduced this legislation to continue the amazing growth and success of Alaska's developing film and television production, but we need the private sector to step up and make the incremental capital investments necessary to grow and develop this multi-million dollar industry. We really need several sound stages so we can have several productions going on at the same time in the state to take this industry to the next level. And the private sector has indicated, and I think you will hear, a willingness to make these investments of private dollars. And we can signal to the private sector with passage of this legislation that Alaska is open for business by extending these production credits. The film incentives passed by the legislature in 2008, and I appreciate those who helped me do that, are responsible for the recent growth of this industry. It took the Department of Commerce and the Departments of Revenue a while to get regulations, and they're good regulations that they produce. They're good teams at both of those departments working on our behalf. But it's taken some time for the word to get out about Alaska and us to gain some traction with these credits. But since their inception in 2008, 18 productions have come to Alaska for our production incentives. These 18 productions filmed in Alaska for a total of 910 days and had a total Alaska spend of nearly $19 million. As of January 2011, there are an additional 28 productions that are pre-qualified for Alaska film incentives. If all these productions are completed, they will have an estimated additional projected Alaska spend of nearly $85 million. So this is no small item. This brings the total projected potential boost to Alaska's economy since 2008 to over $100 million. These are new dollars in our economy. This platform industry reaches across many sectors of the economy with a multiplier effect that increases as we grow and develop this industry. It's also worth noting, Mr. Chairman, that no production has qualified for the full 44% tax credit. The average credit has been around 32 to 33%, and the highest just under 38%. So it's not a full 44, it's up to 44. This $100 million translates into thousands of jobs and opportunities for businesses large and small. We have already seen the benefits. There were hundreds of Alaskans from all across the state working as cast and crew, and the statewide reach is very gratifying to me. In jobs as varied as electricians, carpenters, truck drivers, caterers, security guards, and plumbers, to name just a few. Filming and production have taken place in 35 communities all across the state. So if there's any production that this is just an Anchorage deal, that's a mistaken impression, and we'll prove it to you. Additionally, businesses large and small have experienced a boost from ocean cargo shipping, rental cars and RVs, property rental, construction work, hotels, restaurants, and engineering firms. It's amazing the broad reach of this industry. Businesses have said they were able to stay busy in the shoulder season and keep employees in the off season, and there are letters to that effect in your folder. I'd like to take just a brief moment to discuss the economic impacts of Alaska's most recently completed big-budget film, Everybody Loves Whales. Over 1,300 Alaskans from all over the state earned income directly related to the production of Everybody Loves Whales, and the reach into rural Alaska was wonderful. During the 58 days of filming, Alaskans earned over $4 million in direct wages. Including direct and indirect labor income, filming of Everybody Loves Whales generated approximately $107,000 in income for Alaskans for each day of filming and created approximately $285,000 in economic activity per day in Alaska. This is a substantial boost to the economy, as you can well imagine. The production did business with at least 80 different Alaska businesses. Again, these are retail businesses and services as well as professional services and support industries. The total direct spending on goods and services totaled $7.7 million. It was 12,100 room nights. The Captain Cook Hotel was very happy. Wally Hickel Jr. was ecstatic. Nearly $500,000 in car and motorhome rentals. Nearly $1 million spent on construction, including engineering firms, crane rental companies, fence builders. Local government was very happy because of the bed tax. State government was happy because of the car rental tax. Pavers and renovating and restoration companies benefited. Hardware stores, the list goes on. The total direct and indirect output related to the filming of Everybody Loves Whales was an estimated $16.5 million. So, Mr. Chairman, looking ahead, there are a number of exciting projects on the horizon. Bag of Bones, a Stephen King novel, to be made into a four-hour television miniseries. It's the first time that a production or a book set in another state has been attracted to Alaska for filming. So we've taken a project away from Maine because of our incentives. Next is The Cruelest Miles. That's the story of the original 1925 Iditarod, the Surim Run to Nome. We've seen some archival footage of that momentous occasion. The Cruelest Miles is the book, and I think a lot of rural Alaskans are going to get jobs from that one. And then finally, The Peak, the mountain climbing rescue major motion picture. Specifically, the producers of The Peak have written a business plan to come back to Alaska and make up to 4 films. These are not small projects, Mr. Chairman. These are $40, $60, $80 million projects projected that will be made in our state because of our incentive program. By their 3rd project in New Mexico, these same producers had achieved a 95% local hire, and we can do the same in Alaska. There are incentives built into the project to encourage Alaska hire, and productions have an economic incentive to do so. No producer, looking at the bottom line, wants to pay travel and per diem for out-of-staters. Their economic interests are aligned with our interests to hire local. It can cost a production up to $1 million in travel and per diem to bring crews from Los Angeles, and these guys don't want to do that. Other states paying can be Alaska's gain. Some of our competitors, Michigan and New Mexico, are facing budget crises and are slashing their film incentives. So people that were planning to produce films there are coming to Alaska. This offers our state a unique opportunity to welcome business to our state that we would not normally have. In sum, Senate Bill 23 is a simple 10-year extension. It offers up to $100 million in incentives for each 5-year period. This extension will be a clear signal that Alaska is open for business and serious about developing our infrastructure and workforce while welcoming millions of new dollars into our economy. Mr. Chairman, I appreciate your time and attention this morning. With passage of Senate Bill 23, we can continue the infusion of production dollars into our state while diversifying the economy and welcoming what is a multi-billion dollar worldwide industry to Alaska. With that, thank you very much.
Thank you for your presentation. We have any initial questions for Senator Ellison? We have 2 fiscal notes, one indeterminate fiscal note from the Department of Revenue and Tax Division, and 1-0 fiscal note from the Department of Commerce, Community Economic Development. And we have a couple people. We'll move on to the public testimony. We have one person on the off-net signed up, and we've got a couple people in here, so let's start with the off-net. What I'd like you to do initially is to introduce yourself for the record and who you represent and speak to Senate Bill 23, please. And we'll start with Maya Sleganik.
My name is Maya Salganik, and I'm an assistant professor of film and video arts at the University of Alaska Fairbanks and director of our film studies program. I want to thank Senator Ellis and the members of the Senate Finance Committee for inviting me here to speak this morning on behalf of Senate Bill 23 for the Alaska Film Incentive Program extension. As an educator, I have this wonderful responsibility to help guide our next generation of filmmakers, directors, actors, producers towards their visions and careers as artists and communicators. The University of Alaska Board of Regents recently approved the UAF proposal for a bachelor's degree program in film. This is a 4-year degree program, and it reflects the university's long-term commitment towards maintaining a healthy film industry in our state. 3 years ago, I was asked to testify on behalf of the establishment of this program and in the support of the state film office. The establishment of the film office has been critical to seeing this growth at the university as well as with our industry partners across the state. We've been supplying talent, crew, and logistical support for major national organizations such as the Discovery Channel. We've been involved with independent feature films, which have premiered at the Sundance Institute. We've worked along with Everybody Loves Wales and Universal Pictures, CNN, Discovery Channel, History Channel, etc. Our students have worked with the industry from television commercials all the way through feature films in the last 3 years, and the increase is definitely due to this incentive program. Our students have continued to be in also seeking funding and receiving revenue sources from the National Science Foundations as filmmakers. They've worked with the International Polar Year. They were recognized by the legislature last year for their broadcast from Iraq as embedded journalists. And the work that our students is doing is reaching national attention already in the work of film. And my hope is that with our incentive program, we will be able to continue to expand their opportunities for careers in this field. The Alaska State Film Tax Incentives are the first step in attracting film companies to Alaska. They're providing local Alaskans opportunities not only to work on set, but also provide those services that were mentioned in direct support of productions. From hotels and restaurants to transportation and equipment, these ripples are wide cast. My personal hope is that this incentive program will expand to include a local hire requirement, thereby forcing outside production companies to seek local employees and keep as many of these dollars and jobs in state as possible. Currently, this incentive program does not have this requirement. It takes many years to develop a film production from concept to screen, and we've really only seen 2 years to prove what could be done in our state with the incentive program in place. Once this timeline is extended for another 10 years, we're going to have more filmmakers commit to developing their projects here, and we'll see a surge in productivity and revenue as a result. Film industry is a green industry. It's renewable, it's lucrative, and the benefits of these programs have been proven from New Mexico, North Carolina, New Orleans, Michigan. They've seen substantial revenue growth in the film industry presence. Unfortunately, that growth has a timeline, and so in order to see the advantage of it, we need to commit to it as soon as possible. We have an advantage, though, that Alaska's Alaska. Filmmakers want to be here. They want to share the beauty with the world. They're already here for some of the reasons, but without having some of these incentives, they don't stay as long as we would like them to stay. So my hope is that we continue to keep this revenue in state, give Alaskans the job, and continue to share Alaskan stories with the world. Thank you for your time.
Okay, thank you for your testimony. That's all we have signed up on the OFFNET or the LIOs. Will come into the room here. We have representation from DCCED. Who wants to volunteer? You can introduce yourself for the record and who you represent and speak to the bill, please. So do you guys have a presentation or what's going on?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. My name is Juanetta Ayers. I'm the Director for the Division of Economic Development. I have been asked to provide the committee with an overview of the Alaska Film Office, the work that's been conducted over the last several years with the implementation of the revitalized film development program. As you've heard through testimony, this effort really started, I believe, with the fledgling film industry and the desire to develop Alaska as a preferred film destination, not only for the stories that are specific to Alaska, but for other opportunities as well. With the implementation of the film production incentive and also the revitalization of the Alaska Film Office, I think you'll see that we're well on our way to realizing the vision of both the industry and the concurrence of the legislature in approving the film production incentive. Under the statutory authority, the Film Office has five mandates, which is to cooperate with the film industry for the expansion of the film industry here in Alaska, to promote Alaska as a film production location, to provide assistance to productions shooting in Alaska, to work with internship training and workforce development training programs to develop the localized workforce that we need for the expansion of the industry, and in conjunction with the Department of Revenue to co-administer the Alaska Film Production Incentive Program. Just to step through each one of those roles briefly, with regard to private sector collaboration, we approach that in a variety of different ways. The filmalaska.gov website is one of the major ways in which that's conducted. That's a portal for a variety of information about the program, about how to interact with the film office and to understand shooting in Alaska, as well as how to access the incentive program itself. We're also engaged with a variety of industry organizations, trade associations, and allied groups to help them with their efforts to develop the industry. And we engage in a variety of different outreach activities, not the least of which is on a daily basis fielding a variety of different inquiries from local vendors, from producers, from a variety of individuals that are seeking to access and benefit from this program. In terms of promoting Alaska, we place a variety of print advertising in industry trade magazines and directories. You have an example here of several. Go ahead. And, again, the website is a key portal for promoting Alaska. We also participate in a variety of industry trade shows. These have been key locations for introducing the film production incentive program to the industry and letting people know that we're open for business and ready to have their productions in Alaska. We've produced some print collaterals. This is an example of a customized program brochure that outlines the production incentive and some of the advantages of filming in Alaska, showing some recent examples of work that's been done here. And this is a leave behind that we can produce on a customized basis as opportunities present themselves. One of the key pieces, of course, of interest there is an outline of the incentive itself, the base credit, and then all of the ways that they can achieve a higher credit by Alaskan hire, by producing in the off-season, and by including rural locations in their shooting schedules.
Could you touch a little more on the Alaska hire provision, please?
For Alaskan residents, they can receive an additional 10% credit for those wages that are expended in Alaska for Alaska residents.
You go ahead.
With regard to providing assistance, as I mentioned, we are responding to inquiries on a daily basis. There's a variety of follow-up and outreach that results from attending trade shows. We meet with producers and those that are and also their local contacts with regard to production questions. We work with them on a regular basis to explain the incentive program and understand what their help them understand what the application process is. And just it's the film industry can often throw some very interesting questions our way, and it's a matter of working through them with regard to what their needs and how to best address those within their Alaskan shooting schedule. Workforce development is, of course, a primary focus because we want to increase the local hire. We've seen literally hundreds of Alaskans employed both in front of the camera and behind the camera, and the variety of productions that have come to Alaska over the course of the last several years. But we want to increase that rate. And, of course, we're working with the Department of Labor with regard to some of the apprenticeship programs that would lead to more technical careers in the film industry. As you already heard from one of the previous testifiers with regard to the University of Alaska, their academic programs, both with regards to certificates and degrees, are looking for ways to increase programs for students. There's also a number of private sector training programs that are looking to provide both curricula and on-the-job training for people interested in working in the film industry. And there are other outreach efforts with regard to youth training programs, speaking in schools with regard to the opportunities. Some of you may have seen that some of our schools have been very creative and inspired to do some film work and post that on YouTube, and we think that that's a result of some of the inspiration that they might see about seeing Alaska in film and television. And also rural outreach efforts to let them know about what the opportunities are. We've seen a number of these productions do casting calls in a variety of communities around Alaska, and we believe that, again, with these very specific Alaska stories, that that effort will only increase. There's a variety of different opportunities with regard to the skilled trade for workforce development to help them understand the specific skills and processes that they need to understand for working on film sets, and so those efforts are continuing apace. This graphic speaks to the process for the film production incentive. There's a pre-qualification process. The Alaska Film Office staff works with producers on that process. Once we've received a pre-qualification and there's been an approval of the pre-qualification, then they go through their production process. Finally, once their production expenses have been incurred on the ground in Alaska, there's an auditing process and then a final application and an approval of that process. We have a review committee that looks at those final applications, and then it advances a notification to the Department of Revenue that that final application has been approved. Then the Department of Revenue takes over through their process for issuing the tax credit certificate.
So you audit before you approve them?
They are required to hire an Alaskan CPA to audit their Alaska ground spend.
Okay, so then your audits are up to date?
Yes, they are very current. They're within, I believe, well, there's a great incentive for them once they've finished their ground spend to advance that very quickly. And so that, yes, once we receive them, they're usually very, it's very timely within the conclusion of their auditing process.
Okay.
This chart summarizes experience to date with regard to pre-qualifications that have been approved by fiscal year since the implementation of their film induction, film production incentive program. And also shows you the final applications and the approved applications to date. And then this is a summary, a total by pre-qualification. Tax credits applied and approved. Just with regard to the film office itself, we have two staff positions, one and a half full-time equivalent staff positions for the film office, and we have additional support provided by the commissioner's office, and then also my time as well is dedicated to the program over the course of the last year. And with regard to the operating budget, there was at the implementation of the program, it was conceived that there would be about $275,000 per fiscal year. Based on this year, we've allocated about $283,000 to that. That does not include any estimation for the additional support costs. There's an unallocated overhead cost of about $28,000 for a total of nearly $311,000. This is a very rapidly evolving industry, and we have increasing interest in the production incentive in Alaska. We literally do have a number of productions that are queued up and ready to make a decision to produce in Alaska. You may have heard over the weekend that there's a production that's seeking office and production space. We have a number of other productions right behind that, which really creates a sense of urgency to help resolve some of the issues that they have with regard to soundstage availability in Alaska. To date, when soundstage facilities have been needed, the producers have been very creative in reaching those solutions. We have several private sector interests that have expressed a desire to look at soundstage development, and we're exploring other paths for near-term and mid-term solutions for soundstage availability in Alaska so that we can ensure that these productions do make the decision to produce in Alaska. As you also heard from the university, they've expanded their course offerings, and we're continuing to see increased interest in providing workforce training and education here in Alaska so that we can increase that local hire. These are areas that we're continuing to devote a great deal of time within the department. We think that SB 23 will help create the right environment to make sure that these critical pieces continue to move forward and that we see that kind of private sector investment that will ensure a long-term future for film development in Alaska.
So the department's in favor of the bill?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Are you completed? Finished?
I'm finished.
Okay. Next up, then, John Renzi. You can introduce yourself for the record, who you represent, and speak to the bill, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is John Rentz. I am Sector Leader for Engineering, Construction, and Real Estate for Nano Development Corporation. Our passion is to expand our job base. We support Senate Bill 23 because it will promote investment in Alaska and create employment. Some of the jobs will be new. In a new industry in a state where diversifying the economy is important, if not crucial. The bill will divert money that would otherwise be paid back in taxes, but that diversion creates an important flow back to the state's private economy. I joined NANA in 1985. I came to help lead the Red Dog effort, and at the time the mine was just an unpermitted dream. But by looking forward, we gained success in mining oil and other business, and today we have 2,800 employees living in 70 Alaskan communities. We also learned you cannot rest. Economies are built on decade-long cycles, and resource extraction can't do it all. We have to keep our eye on the future. We started looking at the film business several years ago when we were introduced to Evergreen Films, who had just opened a studio in Anchorage. Led by Mike Devlin, their move to Alaska was driven by our state's special social and physical presence. I have to admit, at first we took the conversations pretty lightly, thinking this was a business for other people, not for us. But what we found, once you cut through the glitz, is a very interesting economic story. What are some characteristics? Like natural resources, this is a platform industry. What I mean is it produces primary products, including films, TV series, and other programs. A fundamental revenue generator, it is a standalone industry. It requires support services, similar to what we do today, like construction, food, hospitality, security. It also creates specialized job opportunities not yet widespread in Alaska. Another characteristic we like is its ability to find every nook and cranny. This industry has wide geographic application. We also find this industry goes well beyond whale movies. While the big productions get attention, there are hundreds of cable channels around the world trying to fill up 24 hours each day. There are documentaries and reality shows and national ads and more. There are many niches that an entrepreneur can headquarter and do in Alaska. We found an industry going through a fundamental change, with traditional film moving to digital formats and technological solutions. It's the way of the future, and it brings Alaska into the game in part because digital travels over the Internet. Perhaps we can stop sending our university students to California and start doing this business here. We started out as skeptics and ended up investing in Evergreen Films, and we are willing to invest in other ways. NANA wants to invest in people via training and in necessary infrastructure such as sound stages and specialized equipment. This brings us to the tax credit concept. Investments in training facilities are made at our risk and are not tax credit eligible, but we need the credits to secure the industry we want to serve. The credits help equalize costs, encourage local filmmakers, and attract outside productions. We need this now because the first film credit program expires in just 2 years. Like in any business, long-term investment decisions require some level of certainty. The rapid increase in the Alaska film and TV productions proves the 2008 film production tax credit is working. Now we can start building for the long term. Mr. Chairman, we are supporting Senate Bill 23 because we want to make a long-term commitment to this business. The legislation would provide credits for 2 5-year periods under terms generally similar to the current law. A total of 10 years with a credit of the same $20 million per year average as the current program. That's a $100 million cap for each 5-year period. This would give the industry assurance that the future is solid. This is a good proposal. In conclusion, I would like to say that NANA is a conservative company. We spent a long time researching the film industry before we invested. What we see goes beyond the Hollywood stereotype. Films about Alaska should be made in Alaska. Unlike most states, Alaska is a wonderful global brand, and with the right catalyst, we can be a long-term industry participant. Thank you very much.
Next up, Bryce Hubberger. And then we've got two folks that are sitting on the off-net. Can you introduce yourself for the record and who you represent, please, and speak to the bill?
Yes. For the record, my name is Bryce Hubberger. I represent myself, a tradesman. Good morning, Chairman, members of the committee. First off, I'd like to thank Senator Ellis for sponsoring this bill. Oh, sure. Okay. Sorry. I'm a working professional who did directly benefit from SB 230 and will benefit, I believe, from SB 23. I was born in Alaska, moved to Chicago to learn my trade at Columbia College, moved back to my home state to start a career. There are many professionals in the state with the same story as myself, moved out of state to learn their trade, moved back because they want to make films in Alaska. Currently, I'm based in Southeast, reside here in Juneau, and was able to provide scouting services to Everybody Loves Whales. Also, I did travel to Anchorage for work on Ghost Vision. I consider myself a freelance tradesman with a qualified skill set that I can offer to incoming film productions. SB 23 would encourage production companies to come to Alaska and hire Alaskans from all across the state. The economic impact, though lessened outside of where the film is shooting, in the case of Whales, the Anchorage area, can still be felt across the state. and measured. Outside productions are concerned with two things: the bottom line cost and hiring a local workforce who has the same professional standards that they would expect in places like LA. SB 23 encourages the hiring of local tradesmen like myself to grow our skill sets and in turn grow the local industry.
Okay, thank you for your testimony, Bryson.
Thank you. Thank you.
Next up, we're going to go to the off-net. David Greathouse, please. David Greathouse.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is David Greathouse. I'm a producer with Warp Film. I'm here today to testify in support of Senate Bill 23, the extension of the film and television production incentive. The simple truth is that we are coming to make multi-million big production budgeted films in Alaska for one reason, and that's the incentive package. We want to make multiple movies back-to-back, but in extending the incentive package is a very important part of that process. It takes quite a while to prep. I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, I have an echo in the phone. It's difficult to hear, so bear with me. It takes a while to put movies together. Production periods and prep and post-production does take quite a bit of time, sometimes up to a year. Sometimes on the bigger budgeted films, it takes more. By extending the Senate Bill 23 to 10 years really gives us the certainty that we need to plan our work in Alaska, to plan big budgeted films, and to put a lot of local Alaskans to work. I've done a very similar process in New Mexico. When New Mexico started their incentive package, I made three films back-to-back. Again, the only decision to go to New Mexico at the time was because of the incentive package. And we actually changed some of the dynamic nature of each screenplay to be set specifically in New Mexico. And we would likely do the same thing for Alaska. And as a matter of fact, we already have in the first film called Peak, the $50 million film that we intend to shoot in a very high-tech process, 3D digital production. We were able to maximize the incentive program, and on the first film, we had to travel quite a few out-of-state crew members from Los Angeles to work on the crew because the crew base in New Mexico was not yet large enough to support our film. But it's of great interest for our productions to hire locally, you know, for the additional incentives that carries with it, but also to save money on our end. We don't have to pay travel and living for folks to travel from Los Angeles or wherever they come. So we took advantage of the New Mexico State Employee Training Program, which was implemented into the incentives that allowed us to recoup up to 50% of a person's salary at the end of production if that person had been promoted to a new position and trained in a different skill. At the beginning of the process, we probably hired about 10% locals. On the last film of those three that I did, we were closer to 95% local hires.
Could I get you to finish up, please, David?
Yeah, I made several movies in New Mexico and continued to hire about 95% local crew members. In addition to the people that work on the film for us or with us, there's quite a large impact on the local economy wherever we shoot. Electricians, carpenters, truck drivers, hardware stores, restaurants, hotels, we have quite an impact on the local economy in which we shoot. To give you a specific example, I recall when we were making the three films in New Mexico, I think we spent around $60,000 on rental cars alone throughout the course of production.
David, could I get you to finish up, please?
Yes, sir. That's essentially the extent of my testimony.
Okay, thank you for your testimony today. Cindy Draper, please.
Cindy Draper.
Hello, my name is Cindy Draper, and I represent ABC Motorhome, and I'll just be very quick here. We worked with both Everybody Loves Whales and Ghost Vision, renting out our motorhomes as their trailers for use on site. We had about 1,500 rental days that we would not normally have at that time of year, and at a cost of about $100 per day brought in a considerable amount for our companies that we wouldn't have at this slow time during the year. Therefore, we are in favor of Senate Bill 23. We're working now with another film company, trying to put something together for them. So it's definitely bringing money into our coffers, and it has allowed us to keep 12 people on through our slow season where we normally only have 7.
Okay, thank you for your testimony today.
Okay, thank you.
That concludes our off-net and our LIOs and people that have signed up in the room, and we'll come back to the committee. Senator Ellis, do you have any final comments before we set this bill aside?
Well, again, Mr. Chairman, I appreciate the hearing. Lots of exciting opportunities. I know there's some fine-tuning to do with the bill, and look forward to working with you and your staff to bring a committee substitute back to the committee at a future date.
Okay, thank you.
Chair,
Senator Olson.
I do have a question of the bill sponsor, and that has to do with when the original bill was put on the table and passed by the legislature, was it anticipated to be as successful as it is today?
Through the chair to Senator Olson, it's coming on like gangbusters. It's surprising everybody how well it's done. There were a lot of skeptics at the beginning that said this will never pan out. Nobody's coming up to Alaska to make movies. It's been just the opposite. It's kind of a gold rush going on.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I think with that, Senator Olson, we're fortunate in certain regards with this economic recession in other states, you know, in the fiscal retreat mode, where Alaska's completely in the opposite direction. With the help of the committee members here, by the way. So I think this is the results of the initial bill exceeded a lot of people's expectation. And so that concludes today's meeting. Next meeting will be tomorrow morning, 9 a.m., to present the FY12 Operating Budget Subcommittee reports. Unless we have additional comments or concerns from committee members, seeing none, we are adjourned.